SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, couple minutes in. Andy Serling standing by from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. Steve, I think you need to have Casey call me back. When he called me, I heard him loud and clear, but then he transferred me to you, and I hear you guys like you're in the bottom of an echo chamber. So you want to have him call me back?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I can barely hear you.
No problem. That happens. Case, maybe grab Andy again. All right, and as we do that, let me see if there's anything I missed in here. Indiana, I'll save that. Indiana, Colonial, Canterbury. We still have to do some more on Del Mar. We got the Travers. Okay, all right, we're not in bad shape. I could mention that I did find that. That other race that it was Ollie, my boy, not Ollie's boy, Ollie, my boy, a little under 7-1 that overhauled Belichick. And to Ron Gierking's credit, Ron said, you know, Belichick could be a horse to lean on. And he seemed to be running a winning race, him and Red Storm Risen. But Ollie, my boy, got that cross-country pick five started at 15.50. So combine that with the rest of the results, including what we talked about with Anthony Margata, hopeful growth at 25.60, contributed to the big payout in the cross-country. Andy Serling back with us. How's this?
Not really better, to be honest with you, but I guess
interesting.
We'll try. I don't know.
Huh. You sound good. That's weird.
Right. You don't. But okay. Sorry. It's not connecting well.
All right. Andy, what a terrific Saturday of racing it was. And I'll repeat what I said yesterday, which was the only thing, you know, that was lacking was 36,000 people thronging the building.
Well, that and Tom's Day Tot breaking well.
That's fair. Yes. Yeah.
No, it was a great day of racing. I mean, I hope people are able to enjoy it, you know, on TV or on the internet. And it's hard, you know. You feel like, you know, you get a race like Vexatious and Midnight Bisou, and it's, you know, one of those sort of memorable Saratoga stretch duels. And you think of last year with a late and Midnight Bisou, and obviously a late was a bigger name than Vexatious, but I think Vexatious is very quickly becoming a big name and kind of a cool story. You know, so much has been made of Tom's Day Tot being a 7-year-old, and here's a 6-year-old that under the tutelage of Jack Sisterson is just, you know, is always a horse with some talent. And she, you know, she ran very well here last year when she was second to Blue Prize. Wow, I just went outside and there's like, I feel like I'm in New York City. She showed it, but she's really gotten better. So you have great races like that. And I hope people can appreciate them without being there. But it's always a little bittersweet these days because not having our fans there and being there to appreciate it, it puts a damper on everything. But there was still great racing.
Agreed. And, you know, I don't want to necessarily belabor. We might as well launch off of this. We'll talk the stakes first. And, you know, there was reason to approach that race cautiously with Bisou. And there, you know, anybody that has listened to the conversation about the figures that she runs, I mean, she was within, you know, the competition was within striking distance of her. And I mean, in terms of the way the race unfolded, what were your thoughts about, I know people are making a lot out of Santana, having to replace Smith, but it sure felt like Jose Lascano did everything right as opposed to anything that Santana might have done wrong.
I don't even know what that means. Honestly, I don't even have any idea what that narrative means. I mean, I just find that these post-race drivel on Twitter has just gotten worse and worse and worse. to the point where I just can't even look at it, to be honest. Anybody that looks at that race and thinks that Ricardo Santana had something to do with that horse losing just knows nothing about horse racing. I'm sorry, but that's silly. I mean, you gave the horse a perfect ride. She got a perfect trip, and she just lost a horse that ran a slightly better race. I don't understand how anybody could look at that race and think differently unless they just have a skewed view of reality. Midnight Bisou ran one of the better buyer speed figures she's ever run. She might have equaled her best figure. So she ran a race, and I think that's one of, what I come from that is, often I'll say after a race, I don't want to give a final opinion until I see what the figs are. Because sometimes you think races are slow and they're fast, and so you think they're fast and they come up slow. And I do believe in speed figures. And she ran a good race. She lost a horse that ran a slightly better race. There's no shame in that. There's way too much made of winning and losing. And I understand that winning is the most important thing in a lot of ways, but it's not the most important thing in evaluating performances. And Ibisu showed that she's still capable of running as well as she ever has. She just happened to lose to a horse that ran better than she did that day. And Jose Lozano gave a very good ride, but he rode the way he was supposed to. In other words, he attended a long shot. I think Jack Sixton had even said before the race that he was going to use her speed, as he should have. And Midnight Bisou, every chance to get by her, just couldn't. I don't know who was going to be on her back besides Ricardo Santana, who's one of the best riders in the country. it's just nonsense. It's a preposterous narrative. The stewards looked at it, and that's fine. They looked at it because there was a jockey's inquiry. But, you see these jockey claims, and the stewards are right on top of it with their inquiry. You don't see too many stewards' inquiries without jockey claims. Something that never seems to come up. It's clear that they piggyback these claims far too often. Sometimes claims that are nonsensical, but it's fine. I mean, she came out, and I'm a big. I believe herding is much more detrimental than our stewards do, for better or for worse. But she barely herded her. What she really did was come out to meet her. She came out a little bit, but not enough to warrant
no.
qualification. Even in my view of herding. It was a good horse race. Let's just call it what it was. Two good horses slugging it out down the stretch. Let's not, change that by talking about phantom fouls and phantom bad rides and all that crap. It was two good horses running really well. Neither horse or, the horses don't hang their heads afterwards. Fortunately, they're not involved in Twitter. As far as I know, there isn't a horse Twitter. So I sometimes think people Twitter is done by horses. And they just both ran really well, and there's nothing more than that. It's just a damn good horse race.
You'll appreciate during the inquiry period, as they were looking at replays, I was in earshot of Bill Mott, who was asked.
Instead of they didn't take down Abel Tasman and the CCAOs, which they should have.
Yes, exactly.
That was just a terrible call.
But yeah.
That was a clear-cut foul. The late should have been placed first.
That was great. It was very funny. They're obviously they're all going to meet again, and maybe Point of Honor gets a better chance with some pace to run at, etc.
No. Point of Honor is never beating these kind of horses. If she couldn't win the Phipps with the setup that she got in an absolutely ideal circumstance, she's never going to beat these horses, period.
That could be.
I had the drivel about her being a better two-turn horse than a one-turn horse, all this stuff. Point of Honor is a really nice horse. She is not as good as the best horses, period. She's had chance after chance after chance, and she's not. She's not a bad horse. She's a very good horse, but she's not as good as those horses. I don't want to hear any more about her. I don't. It's nonsense. I mean, this narrative that she had another one, that she was a better two-turn horse, despite the fact that it just wasn't proven out by her figs and her performances in races. She's a nice horse. She's just not good enough to beat these horses. And frankly, after that performance in the Phipps, I think her question of her will to win has to be brought into question. I'm not trying to knock her, but to put her into the same category as these top horses, they're pretty good horses. They're better.
I want to feather something in, and I just got a terrific note from Michael Garrity, who everyone knows and I'm sure is missing.
Everyone knows Michael. My mother was asking me about him. Somebody stopped me on Spring Street and asked me about him. Everyone knows Michael.
give me a break.
Everyone around Saratoga knows him because, of course, he's got very. Well, Michael Garrity, the artist, who's been on the grounds for years. He brings up a good point. There was a 4-pound, for those that consider weight as a factor, Vexatious was getting 4 pounds.
Okay. Thank you for introducing. I don't care.
Well, some people do. Weight still counts for something.
The weights die on, and you guys can discuss it. It carries
on. Absolutely. Jerry still believes in weight. Let's talk about the Whitney, and obviously this whole race hinges on the first jump, and Tom's the Todd in deep water immediately.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate occurrence at so many levels. I mean, you want to see the biggest races. Everybody have a fair chance to win. You've got Tom the Todd, who, you know, Al Stahl's had an incredible job bringing him along, and you come into his biggest race of his career. He's a heavy favorite, and he loses all chance to start. That sucks. That's just one of the lousy things that happens in horse racing sometimes, you know, and you hate to see it happen in those spots. Whether or not he would have won, I don't know. I think there is a realistic chance he would have. It obviously would have been a somewhat different race. I don't know, but I don't think that in any way diminishes Improbable's performance, and I think you have to say that Improbable, based on his performances, is the top handicap. You know, older horses, no handicap anymore. Older horse at this point. That doesn't mean that Tom Zaytot won't get his chance to unseat him. But Improbable has matured a little bit as a 4-year-old. Obviously, he acted up a bit in the gate, and good job by the gate crew waiting for him. And, you know, they sprung the latch at the right time for him. Unfortunately, it turned out to be the wrong time for Tom Zaytot. That's just bad luck. But Improbable, I mean, he had the run of the race and everything, and so kind of an easy go of it. And I guess the argument that it could have been different if Tom Zaytot had broken and even more poorly placed, maybe. You know, that's fair, but I don't think it changes the fact that Improbable won, and unfortunately Tom Zaytot didn't. I'm probably a bigger fan of Tom Zaytot than I am Improbable, but, you know, when you take back that race where Tom Zaytot ran him down at Oaklawn, Improbable ran a better race that day. Not knocking Tom Zaytot. I know there's that short stretch thing at Oaklawn. I don't really know what that means. Their distances are distances. The bottom line is that Improbable worked much harder, had to do much more dirty work in that race than Tom Zaytot did. So, I don't know. Improbable to me seems the leader of a wide open sort of group of horses. We'll see what Vekoma does in the four go. And I mean, I think in some ways you ask the question about the Met Mile because Code Honor had run so well in it, and he was awful in the Whitney. And you want to say the pace was way against him? Okay, but he was bad. You know, it felt like more than just the pace for Code of Honor. Maybe he just didn't show up because he's generally shown up, but he really didn't run well in the Whitney. I mean, and I liked his chances, so it was disappointing. And I don't, you know, I'd like to make an excuse for him, and you can use the pace as a bit of an excuse, but his performance was more lackluster than just the pace, I thought.
I agree. I mean, there was really no point where, you know, watching him and then watching on replay that it looked like he was in a position to contend even. It just was,
right. Well, look at the race that Tom Zaytot ran compared to his race.
Right.
I think that's the way you have to look at it. You know, Tom Zaytot was badly compromised in every possible way, blew by him and ran a final 3/8 under 35, according to Trackett. So, compared to Tom Zaytot, there was no way you could say Code of Honor could win that race when you look at the race that Tom Zaytot ran. So, it was a disappointing effort. You know, I imagine Sugar will regroup and hopefully he's fine and come back in the woodwork. But, you know, he's going to have to really step it up to improve off that race. We'll see.
You know who the redheaded stepchild out of this was, is By My Standards, who ran another 102 buyer and ran
right.
another
well,
nice race.
I guess if you want to be critical of Improbable, you say, well, look at how, you know, By My Standards ran, and they had sort of a similar trip scenario, but Improbable drowned him. You know, By My Standards was just sort of the fortunate recipient of circumstance. A, he has the speed to put himself in position. and B, Tom Zatala is badly compromised. But Winston still shows up and runs a good race. He's not as good as these top horses, but he's a good horse. He's a better horse than Point of Honor, but it's not completely dissimilar to that, that he's a cut below the very best horses. It doesn't make him a bad horse. He's a very, very good horse. He's just not as good as the best horse.
You know what I thought of when you said about, you know, being fortunate? The image came in my head of Captain Reno in Casablanca when Major Strasse talks about blundering Americans and Claude Rains says, I wouldn't underestimate American blundering. I was with them when they blundered into Berlin in 1919. I was thinking the same. This popped right in my head. It was pretty funny. Good job.
I'm sure somebody's laughing somewhere.
I'm laughing. That's all that matters.
But I'm sure, yeah, you're always laughing.
talk about the Jerkins. And this was really, this was from a lot of standpoints, Andy, including the betting. Because not to take anything away from what kind of a horse No Parole is, it was crazy that he was taking the money that he was taking. He seemed totally impossible in here.
Listen, I didn't like him last time, and I certainly didn't like him this weekend. I don't want to beat up on my friend Tom Amos' horse too much. And they can't take away his Woody Stevens win, but yeah, he shouldn't have been 8-5 in there. I was surprised when David made him 2-1, and as usual, you know, David Aragona makes the line. As usual, he was right. I couldn't imagine that he would be a short price in there. People so badly overvalue winning over the nature of the way races are run, especially in big races, it seems. You know, in the big races where there's a lot of extra money in them, it seems like results are so much more important than performance. And he did run well last time, but he also had the race sort of drop in his lap, and there seemed to be little chance that was going to happen again, and it didn't happen again. He'll be back to fight another day. He's still a good horse. I was talking with Andy Beyer about it yesterday because the race got, a 93 fig, and it seemed like a little on the low side. And, you know, there is somewhat of an argument that the track could have gotten a little bit slower at the end of the day. They decided to play it straight with a straight variant. Maybe the race could have been a little bit higher on the Beyer scale. I don't know. I guess time will tell. But the winner ran. It's funny. I mean, you watch the race. Echotown was under a full-out drive from Ricardo at the 3-ace pole. And I think if you bet him and you saw that, you were thinking to yourself, well, that's another loser I got. I know when I bet horses, they look like that in the turn. I don't think I've ever cashed a bet. but he just picked it up in the stretch and ran by everybody. He was a decisive winner. I thought that Tapping to Win ran fine. He was right on top of the pace and ended up coming apart quite a bit. So I thought his effort was pretty good. We'll see. You know, they're a competitive group of horses. I imagine a lot of them will go forward to the Pat Day Mile. Maybe we'll see some of them in our Amsterdam, which I think we're running at the end of the meet. I think we are at 6.5. So we'll see who comes back for that. And I think people decide who wants to go further and who wants to go shorter distances. But Echotown was a dominant winner.
Interesting, too, that you had, Echotown and Shoplifted, and they, you know, they're coming out of the Woody Stevens, and of course for Shoplifted, second 7/8 try in a row after, you know, going longer. But for Tappet to Win, it's a legitimate turn back. Captain Bombastic ran a nice race in there.
No, he's a fine, nice horse. You know, he's
yeah,
fine, nice, you know, he's always had some talent. I mean, Shoplifted showed. You know, maybe if Shoplifted was coming into this race directly off a turn back, maybe he would have run a little bit better and gotten second. If Tappet to Win still would have run the better race. I think he showed that he's just as who he is. You know, he's okay. He's okay, but he's no superstar.
The disappointments in here, at least from a betting standpoint, Three Technique, who just, I mean, didn't lift a hoof.
Yeah, but I thought he'd run well, and I mean, he felt like he needed more than a race, huh?
Yeah. Yes.
He was dreadful.
Not good. And Mischievous Alex, who I tried to build around, and
he really
you know,
in there. I was surprised. I just don't think he's good enough, but I don't think he's really gotten better since his races in the spring. It doesn't seem like he has. You know, listen, I mean, it's probably one of the few correct choices I made. you know, it seems like my second choices are doing just fine. My top choices are doing less than fine, to say the least. But, you know, in that one, at least I had happened to win over three technique. I toyed with either way. At least this time I actually picked the one that ran better for my top choice. It's a bit of rarity.
Let's talk about the Bowling Green and Sadler's Joy, needed to come down. I addressed the inconsistency issue when it comes to these kinds of
I don't see
decisions.
Any inconsistency from our stewards in this situation at all. I don't see any inconsistency. They've taken every horse down that's done what Sadler's Joy has done the entire time I've been at Naira.
Well, what about the race downstate?
That was a hurting. That wasn't as much contact. Though I'm going to, you know what? You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I misspoke. There was that preposterously awful call in the first defense when they should have taken down.
Yes, therapist.
They should have taken down therapist. 100%. You're 100% right. I agree. I stand corrected. Other than that, I can't think of one. That one will remain mystifying until the end of time. I have no idea how they left that horse up. And you are correct. This was probably a little bit worse. Because in that one, when Flavius almost got killed on the rail, being ridden by Irad's brother, and Irad was on the offending horse, it was probably when the race was over. And this one, when Channel Maker was fouled
right.
because of the coming in, it was during the race. So that was a slight difference.
That's
but
true.
I think,
that's true.
It was, you know, the incident, and not to make light of it, but the incident with Channel Maker clearly being fouled, I think is the proof positive because it's not a great head-on view. It's not a true head-on, which we need to get, obviously, for the inner turf. But it was enough to know that what happened there. And he came in. I mean, it's unfortunate. He probably was going to win. But I don't think in that situation it was wrong to take the horse down. And I think the people who are saying they leave horses up for herding and X the therapist won. You're right about therapists, but 99% of the time, this has come down. I really haven't seen any clear cut. And this was probably more contact egregious than the therapist. The therapist was terrible, and he should come down. Period.
Well, it did seem. I mean, to me, and there's it doesn't necessarily have to be confined to the. To the turf, you get these, you know, these breeze buys, you know, and horses as they come abreast of others, they, you know, their tendency is to gravitate toward the fence. That's just
come on. This horse came in and he fouled.
Yeah, he did. He came in.
You're making up scenarios. It was a foul. Next, I don't really see this as a real discussion.
All right. Well, then
you do. I don't.
Well, in the meantime.
In the meantime, I wish that division, with all due respect, could find some new blood.
They got the same problem out west too. They've got it's a bunch of the same suspects over and over.
Well, I imagine that the crew from the I would like to think of the crew from the UN will come to spice things up in the
yes.
sword dancer. But
yes,
you know, I mean, listen, Sadler's Joy is a really cool horse, and Channel Maker, et cetera, and Cross Border and stuff. But these friends are starting to meet too often.
I hear you.
Like going to a party, it's the same people. And you go, you know, I've been to this. I was at this party last week. I'm going to pass today. No disrespect to those that attend, but I'd like a few others to come. It needs some new blood.
The other spots around the day, and of course, there was the Caress that was the nightcap. Another one of these. Turf,
I think it just shows the meat that Christophe Clement is having. If that horse could win a stake race in Saratoga, Christophe Clement might win 50 races the way things are going. I mean,
yeah.
I can't believe that horse won. I mean, it turned out none of the major players showed up at all, but she showed up, and I guess that's been the hallmark of Christophe's incredible meat so far, where his horses are just showing up every time. And when you show up every time, good things happen. And, I mean, based on that horse's last race, I have no idea how she was competitive in this race, but she clearly ran a better race, and while others failed to run like the favorite, she did. She showed up.
Some thoughts about the 2-year-old. That reinvestment risk was exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he got a 90 buyer, and it was, you know, devastatingly good in a race where there were tips on just about everybody. Sort of one horse showed up, and Tom Amos's horse, who had experience, ran second, and yeah, reinvestment risk looked very, very good. you know, in a meet that for most people has gone very well, but for Chad Brown, obviously, it hasn't gone as well as his, you know, normal production. So because of that, you're hearing all sorts of idiotic narratives, too, about that. But the reality is that winning 9 races at Saratoga in the first 14 days is pretty darn good. It's just not what we're used to in some ways from Chad Brown's production. But that's when you have a 2-year-old win like that, it's a great healer, because the 2-year-olds are so important going forward. And that was the best 2-year-old we've seen in New York, that's for sure, so far. And, you know, I think, you know, I was talking to Chad, and Chad thought, you know, he was helped by the rail when I talked to him. And I told him, I saw nothing at all on Saturday to suggest the rail was any kind of advantage whatsoever. I don't think that horse was in any way sort of biased-aided in there. He had a very good trip, but I don't think he was pulled along by a bias based on any other races I saw, unless the first race stood in some sort of isolation, which I suppose is always possible, but I saw no evidence of that.
Well, and speaking of, by the way, speaking of Amos, the 17-1 winner of that second race and the Creative Cause colt, 94 buyer in that spot with Spirit Animal, who of course had the claim voided last time. And
Spirit Animal probably should have won. I mean, but David Cullen gave a very clever ride by staying outside and forcing Javier to go inside. It was a funny race. If they hadn't rated Dream Friend, I think Jose Lozano has been great at this meet. That was, and I don't think that was his call. I feel like they just assumed that what's his name was going to, Hidden Scroll was going to gun the lead. And if they had kept going forward with Dream Friend, it might have been a very different race. And then when he came outside, just sort of the whole thing got sort of screwed up. But, you know, but I said before the race very clearly that this was a six-horse field that anybody could win. I couldn't understand why Tom's horse was such a big price in there. That horse is running races that were easily fast enough to compete in that field. I have no idea why it was such a big price. It got completely lost. You there?
I am. I'm just looking down a couple of other things. We talked to Jack Sisterson yesterday. Everfast got back on the main track, and the race wasn't a fast race, but... Yeah.
Slow race.
But he ran well.
Yeah, he did. I mean, not great, but he justified his decision to run in the Makers 46 as opposed to running the Met Mile. Jack Christensen's done a million things right, and I'm not saying it was his call, and I guess they wanted to stay at Keeneland, but, boy, it felt like after that race, he ran in the mile race at Churchill. He belonged to the Met Mile board, and he ran in a random turf race. Not a turf race, a grade one turf race, but he's not a turf horse. But
let's,
I guess,
see,
he was going to run an 83 buyer. He was better off saving the ship. He could have run last anywhere.
He's trying to angle him toward maybe the dirt mile.
I would agree. I mean, you know, he could run a race like the Kelso in New York and see where he fits in there. You know,
that's which he talked about. He absolutely.
No, he's done a great job. Jack has. I mean, what I've seen since we started looking at the Churchill races and the performances here as well. And I mean, what he's done with Vexatious has been terrific. And it's good. It's good to see, you know, new names in the training. You know,
yes.
I mean, Christophe's not a new name, but, you know, and don't forget, Christophe's had a very tough year, you know. People may forget, and I'm sure in some ways you want to forget, but you don't want to forget. There was a van accident where 10 horses died, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that's a terrible tragedy just in and of itself. And obviously the worst thing is the loss of the lives of the horses, but they were Christophe's horses. So, you know, for people, you know, he has won a lot of coin flips at Saratoga, no doubt about it. He'd be the first to agree with that. But you know what? He was due a few, and he was due a more than a few, actually. So you know what? Good for him. It's nice in racing to see something good happening for somebody in a year where he's had some tough things happen. And I don't think that should be completely forgotten.
No. Well, and I'll tell you how strong things are going. He got a son of Mr. Sydney to win.
Mr. what? Mr. Sydney? Really?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that horse that was so crazily bet. Even I watched the race with Christophe. Even he was surprised he was favored in there.
Mr. Alec.
Yeah, he galloped. They knew. He was big, like a 95 buyer. Listen, I'm happy for Christophe. I like Christophe. You know, I mean, Chad and I are good friends. I want Chad to do well. And he is doing well. He's just not doing as well as he has in some past times. I think that'll probably change. But there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, Todd Fletcher's having a good meet. Mike Baker's having a great meet. And you know what? I mean, it's you've seen people at the top. The competition's good, right? I mean,
yes.
I think it's made the meet better.
Yep. How about, you know, speaking of which, you made me think of something, too. Robert Falcone with a pair of wins on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Fort Worth came back and ran a bang-up race for Pletcher.
No trainer is more remarkable with horses coming off substantial layoffs on dirt than Todd Pletcher. Chad Brown has very good numbers, more turfy, but some, you know, off the long layoffs, but Todd Pletcher's numbers are off the charts incredible. He's now, with that horse winning, he's now 10 for 20 over the last 5 years with year-plus layoffs.
In wow.
And that's
wow.
Unbelievable.
10 for 20.
And listen, Fort Worth's obviously a very good horse, but there are a lot of good horses that go by the wayside, and they come back a year and a half later, and they can't run at all. So, I mean, this horse hadn't run since April of 2019. I mean, I was at Oakwater. I remember when he won at Oakwater. I remember watching it on my computer in the hotel room. I bet some horses are still running, I think.
I should bring up, since we mentioned the boys' race on Saturday, the girls' race on Sunday, visually, it looked like it was going to be impressive, and it came back very ordinary.
Which one was that?
The two-year-olds, Lady Lily and the fast-closing Modine of Chad's.
Yeah, it came up 57 buyer.
Yeah. That surprised, because it visually it looked like a good race.
It did. I mean, obviously, it didn't look that slow. If you take, forgetting about, listen, you know what I think. There's no trips in slow races. I have no interest in betting anybody back out of that race, considering how slow it came up. But obviously, the second horse was more interesting because she made that big run from well back. But the winner, you know, the winner was funny. I mean, the winner, Joelle, was riding the winner as hard as you could pretty much the whole way, and she still kept running. But maybe now we know why she supposedly still, quote, kept running, unquote, because they were running so slowly that there was just nobody around to pass her. And as far as the second horse, maybe she was impressive closing because the race was just completely coming unglued and nobody else was running. So I tend to think that when races are that slow, everything that happened was sort of an illusion. But we'll see going forward. There have been certainly slow horses that started their careers that ended up being fast horses in relatively short time. But not a lot.
Andy, before we look ahead to, you got the Travers draw tomorrow, of course, and before we look ahead to the week, I do want to mention one other horse.
I haven't done enough today.
No, you haven't. Not until you fulfill a full 30 minutes.
It's 11:36.
You started at 11:08, I think.
I'm counting now.
Rinaldi, you're unbelievable. I want to put in a plug for Rinaldi and Jim
Why?
Bond. He's a nice horse.
And plug for Jimmy Bond. He's a very good trainer.
Yes.
He and both of his sons do a great job. And, you know.
Yes.
Okay, we good?
No, not yet. I'm going to uts out everything.
No, I just want to know if we covered Jimmy enough.
We covered Jimmy enough. Rinaldi.
My phone says 32 minutes. I'm just pointing it out. But okay.
Unbelievable. give us a couple of thoughts. Something tomorrow?
No.
Nothing?
I'm not getting thoughts on tomorrow's card. Pouring
All right.
Now.
All right. Well, then.
People can watch Talking Horses and watch the show if they want my thoughts.
Then how about your early Travers? I know you're probably getting ready for the Travers draw and the interviews.
Yeah, while I'm talking to you, I'm busily writing down questions.
Well, what is the most important question Saturday involving Tis the Law, Uncle Chuck, and company?
I don't know. How's your horse training? Do you like your posts?
Those are the worst.
The post question is the worst. What's that?
the post question. You hate those. You
well,
try to avoid those.
Poll. Who cares what the posts are?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I know there's talk that Tis the Law needs to draw outside. He doesn't like being inside of horses. I don't agree with that notion. I don't think there's evidence. I think that most of the time you'd like to have your horses out in the clear making their runs, right? My concern with Tis the Law is that he hasn't really gotten faster. That's my concern with him.
Yeah.
In my heart, I want him to win. I love seeing Barkley do well and Manny do well, and I like that horse. But I've got some reservations going into Saturday. I know he dominated the field in the Belmont, but this field's getting tougher, and I think others are going to get better. You know, I think that horse, you know, Country Grammar ran well in the Jim Dandy, but mm-hmm. the Peter Pan, but I think the horse Caracaro. That horse is good. I mean, I don't know if he's up to winning a race like a Travers in his fourth start, but he's good. I think Linda's horse is going to run a better race. Max Player, I think he's improving with every start. I think Uncle Chuck is going to be tough. These Baffert horses come here and they run. So this is going to be a real challenge for Tis the Law. This is going to be his biggest challenge for sure. I hope he's up to it. I'd love to see him win. I have some reservations.
The other part of this that we haven't had a chance, and obviously tomorrow, once that draw comes together for the Travers, everybody will be focused on that, and they're going to run the test in the Ballerina, which are wonderful in their own right.
I saw coming up good. Not running. I don't know what happened to her. I didn't see her listed as a probable, right?
Ooh. Are they waiting for... That's interesting. Is he waiting for Kentucky?
No, she was supposed to run in here. I have no idea. I didn't ask Chad Brown about her.
All right.
But I didn't see her in the list of probables, so maybe I missed something. But the big filly's coming. Kameen. I see Venetian Harbor's running. I think she's going to run very well. It should be a good race.
It, very much. And one thing I want to, if people haven't looked at Friday's card, by the way, Saratoga Special, the 2-year-olds came out of the woodwork.
Yeah, it's a good race. A couple of good-looking Asmussen horses in there. I thought
Nacho? Correas?
Yeah, Nacho is a very nice-looking horse that lost to one of the Asmussens but came back with that big win at Keeneland. I thought Brennan told me that Roderick was going to run in California.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Christoph's horse, Monos, is coming back as well. So, yeah, that's a shaping up. It's a good race.
Very much, and nice way to lead into.
Next guest, Steve? What lucky person is on next?
Bob Baffert?
Well, I would hate to think that I'm taking any of Bob's time, and I want you to make sure that Bob knows that I tried to get off for him, but you wouldn't let me.
I'm actually, you're carrying us to the wire as we try to, as Casey efforts, Bob. So.
Bob is probably so glued to listening to my brilliant insights that he doesn't want it to end. Or else maybe he's intentionally torturing me and making me stay on. More like
are they patching Baffert in tomorrow for the conference for the draw?
I don't know, ask him.
All right.
I'm just the talking head. I don't have to do all the other stuff.
I love it.
I'm just a pretty face.
You can ask the questions yourself of Bob Baffert, who joins us now as thanks, Andy. Andy Serling, everybody, and Bob Baffert standing by and joining us after a remarkable Saturday and Sunday. And Bob, obviously you win another Whitney, but we're going to start talking about Thousand Words because he's my horse. He's my favorite.
Yeah, he's probably turned the corner back around. I always thought we were very high on him early in the year, and then he got a little sour and ran a couple of bad races, but freshened him up a little bit. Now we got down here. He ran a big race here today. It was I love the way he ran. Cezanne, he just got tired. He was just struggled a little bit, but not quite ready for that. And so, but Thousand Words, you know, Holdoff. Honorary penis. That was pretty big.
Well, you hinted after the Haskell 2 weeks ago when we talked, and you brought up Thousand Words unprovoked, and you said how happy you were and that he had really picked his head up with the trip down to Del Mar.
Yeah, a lot of horses, they get down here in that cooler air, and they just start doing well, you know, and so he just, that's what he needed. He just, you know, needed a little kind of change of scenery is good for him. A lot of horses, they do really well down here at Del Mar. Just like, you know, you hear about horses going to Saratoga.
Yep.
Just a different atmosphere, and they start coming around, and that's what, you know, he's just getting stronger and stronger.
Are you're not taking him across the street and letting him romp in the ocean the way they used to?
They don't let us do that. I'd be afraid if he got loose. We'd never catch him. So I can't imagine them riding their horses back in the day over there.
Right?
And they would ride them bareback. They would ride them bareback and like, wow, I mean, I can't imagine taking a horse like Maximum Security out there and tromping around and
exactly.
Let some shark get a hold of his leg.
Oh, it's great.
I turned to Jimmy at Saratoga, and it was what? It was 90 seconds after the win in the shared belief. And we talked about it for 2 seconds, and then, you know, off goes the Whitney. Talk about what transpired there and, you know, watching Improbable get another big win.
Yeah, I mean, he was training. He's really just a different horse this year. He's really matured. And, you know, when I went in the gate, you know, I was watching him in the gate, and he was acting well, and all of a sudden, he goes up, and he just a naughty boy. He gets in there, and he really, it's not like he's a bad gate horse. He just, I think, he gets a little claustrophobic in there.
Mm-hmm.
And in California, they have different pads. Different tracks have different pads. And the pads here, he likes, but they don't have one in there. And so, where he feels more comfortable. And some horses that way, they just feel that iron, and they just feel tight. And but then he got away. I mean, that the guy there, the starter, the assistant starter that was in the gate with him, he did an unbelievable job. He could have gone over. He was.
Yep.
He looked like he was an inch away from turning over completely, you know, and it could have been disastrous. And so, but he still, after that, you know, usually when they do that, they don't run as well, you know, because it kicks a little bit out of them. But he's a good horse, and that's why he kept, you know, that's when he really, to me, that was probably the most impressive part. Not only did he win, but he won after those antics of getting mad in there a little bit. But he handled it. He came through, and I was happy for the Windstar group. They've never won the Whitney, and Elliot Walden. He said, "Let's run him there," and I think that's a good spot. I said, "Let's go for it." And so, we have a really good working relationship with Elliot.
Well, and that, as you mentioned, getting a win like that, and certainly Elliot, you know, some of his top performers tried, you know, when he was training. Came through here and had success at Saratoga, undoubtedly, and Victory Gallop and so forth. But the one part I keep telling everybody, Bob, I've said this 3 times in 2 days, to have a day like that, like we had, and, you know, there should have been 37,000 in the building. And that part of it is just, it's so, so weird. How was the first weekend at Del Mar with some owners around?
Well, I mean, it's nice, you know, to have a few people up there, but, you know, still, at least down there, if they win a race, they can go down there and greet their horse and get the winner's circle and enjoy it a little bit more, you know, even though they have their masks on. But here, we're still like, you win, and you just stay in your seat, and you go, well, that was fun. You know, so it was like, not the same, you know, I'd like, you know, to eventually, you know, or at least we should go down there and greet the horse, you know, just like when the filly ran Fighting Mad, she went in the paddock. She can do that. She can be bad in the paddock. And Del Mar is probably not one of the better paddocks. It's sort of wide open. A lot of horses act up in there. And so she just sort of fell apart in there. She was washing out. She was trembling, putting the saddle on her, and we were schooling her. And then we hosed her down. I really thought she was doing so well coming to the race. I was so upset that she was losing it in there. But when she got out on the track, then I could tell she relaxed and she was fine. But I really didn't think she would run like that after the way her antics in the paddock. So she is really getting really good, that filly. She's really getting serious, you know, if you would have seen her, I mean, put in mind, what do you think? I don't know. I would have bet on her before, but I don't trust her now. She fell apart on me, you know. And everybody saw her in there. We had to hose her down. But, I mean, that was really impressive what she did the other day. And those are really good fillies, Jason.
Yeah. well, 100 buyer, and you could just see on the turn, you know, when everybody else is being asked, and she was going lickety split, and nice and relaxed. She got into a great beat.
No. I was just happy for the West. You know, what they've been through, and they were excited about it. They raised their hand, so you know, a little excitement there. So that was good.
Well, speaking of the West, because I kind of anticipated, you know, an off week last week, and we didn't talk about Maximum Security. Here we are, you know, 9 days removed. Some thoughts about the performance and, you know, him really kind of gutting it out and just refusing to lose, essentially.
Yeah, he didn't win by enough to talk about him. Yeah. It was he really got it a lot. You know, he shows what a really great horse he is, because he shouldn't have won with that kind of trip. You don't do that, especially
yep.
with a horse like Midnight Court, is a really good horse and on the lead. He's hard to beat, and Midnight Court in the paddock, he looked really good. He looked like the horse to beat, and so you know, so he, but he gutted it out, and I'm. There was something about that horse. Ever since when I in Saudi Arabia, that's probably been his best race, because he was. And I was telling Gary when I saw him there, that horse was empty turning for home. And I opened up on him, and I thought, there is no way I'm going to lose this race with Lucho Justo. And that horse, he found a will to win. You know, that horse has a big heart, competitive, and he got up there to win that race.
Yep.
And he did that the other day. I mean, at the top of the stretch, he shouldn't have won. But I just feel that about Silver Charm. He reminded me of Silver Charm in a way. He's just a very noble horse, and he, when he gets in a fight like that, he's relentless. He's going to fight. And, man, he's got a lot of heart, that horse. And so, and that's why he won. He won because he did not give it in. He could have packed it in at any time, but he did not.
How much did he get out of that effort too? Because you know, obviously the goal is the Pacific Classic and then Breeders' Cup. But talk a little bit about you know what you've seen over these last 7, 8, 9 days.
Well, I think the light came on. Ever since then, he's been pretty. You know, I can tell a different kind of horse. I breathed him a little bit yesterday by himself. I mean, easy half with another horse just going easy, and I don't have to be so. I was sort of hard on him, getting him ready to get him fixed. He was a heavy horse, sort of lazy in the mornings, and so. But I bet he'll move way up off of that. So I expect a bigger performance next time, and you know he'll need it. You know, he's going to go a mile and a quarter, but I'm happy with him. He woke up, and you know I'm figuring him out. You know, I got you know it was just like
sure.
I got this horse. He didn't come with any instructions, so I had to figure it out. And so it's like the first time you opened up, you know, you had to put a chair together. You know, it takes sometimes you put the screws in the wrong places. You know, and so it's like I finally figured him out. We figured out, you know, when I first got him, he didn't want to eat. You know, I had trouble with him the first couple of weeks eating. You know, and now he's eating everything and doing well, and so. You know, I think just a change of scenery, you know. And
sure.
And then finally, he fell right into our, you know, the way we train him, you know. He was trained totally differently before.
That's for
know,
sure.
I never, you know, and so I just trained him like I trained my horses. And now he's marched right along. And, you know, you find out what they like, what they don't like, how he doesn't like Jordan. I learned a lot about him. In that race the other day, I mean, I really learned a lot about him, and so I expect a bigger effort from him next time.
Well, on both coasts,
that was a big effort though. That Midnight Court, people don't realize he is a really good horse, especially down here at Del Mar.
Well, and you want to I got a couple of off the racetrack topics to address with you. We got about 5-6 minutes, and of course we've got Gamine coming and Uncle Chuck for Travers, and Gamine for the test. But Bob, two things. the racetrack, which I know John Sheriff's absolutely telegraphed that the way the track had kind of changed, that it was tighter early in the summer and then got very heavy and you know, slow and dull on everybody. Some thoughts on that?
Yeah, when we first got here, it was a little bit tighter. They were going over it. And then they added some sand to it, but I think what it is that, and I noticed Santa Anita at the end, when everybody left, there were still a few barns there, and I stayed to the very end. The track got really well. So I think it's when you have a lot of horses on it, it just chews it up, and it just chews it up right away. And I think that's what it is. And but this last weekend, it started tightening back up again, because we went, Maximum Security went 144 and change or something.
Yeah.
It was like, it was 2 seconds off, you know, but it's, you know, they were tinkering, and Ben's more, he's working with it, and he's, you know, he's trying to keep it safe. We're under a lot of pressure. Everybody's around, there's so much pressure, you know. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard the word protocol, you know. And so, it's just everybody's under pressure, you know. The state's on everybody. We got everybody against us. We got down here, you know. So, you know, they're trying to find the fine line. And being a track man, it's a tough job because, you can't keep everybody happy. But, you know, we want to keep them safe. But there's a fine line there. And actually, Dennis is really, you know, he's making adjustments and he's getting it right.
You mentioned protocol. It seemed yesterday with that teleconference and some of the comments that were flying around and some of the speculation that's come out of it, and I've been saving this expecting to talk to you, you seem to have the most practical solution, it seems, to the jockeys coming for Oaks and Derby, but it seems like they're leaning toward what was suggested by Kevin Flannery yesterday, making guys come in like 10 days early, and it's going to really makes for some hard decisions for guys at Del Mar and Saratoga.
Well, I mean, I don't know the thought process that went into that. It just, to me, I know what happened at Los Alamitos. Los Alamitos, first of all, I hadn't had any employees. It's probably been the safest place until that weekend. And what happened is an exercise rider that was sick, that was told to go home, didn't go home. He went to Los Alamitos to work as a valet, and he's the one that exposed everybody. That's what happened there. And so all it takes is one person. So I was telling him about the valets, but you don't want to go in there 10 days. You're just, if you have to go to Wuhan on business, I want to go for 3 days. I don't want to go 10 days in. You know? And so, you know, it's hot everywhere. You don't know where you're going to get it. But the thing is, I'm just afraid that these riders will go in there, and if they keep testing them, then all of a sudden they tell you the night before, hey, by the way, your rider, you need somebody else to ride your derby horse. You know, it's just and the thing is about it, we're not third graders. Everybody knows how to be safe and take care. With the protocol, I don't want to hear that word protocol anymore. It's something that is just, you know, we know what we need to do. If you're older, be careful. The younger ones, that, you know, we know safety. Keep mask on. Wash your hands. We know. We don't have to be reminded about that, you know. And so, and like the backside, you know, for the Derby, you know, it's open air. It's, you know, you can, people stay away from each other, you know. But I don't know. The 10-day thing that's sort of ridiculous. I mean, I think it's, especially going into Louisville right now. I mean,
right.
You know, they've got their own problems there right now. And so this derby thing, we just need to get in there last minute, run it, get out. We've been waiting since May, you know, let's just get in there, get it done, and you know, enjoy your... be in there for a few days and get out of there. So
they're
I don't want to be in there long enough to be able to get it. You know?
You just want to be able to be there long enough to get the little gold trophy and go home.
Yeah, run your horse. Everybody have a good time there, and then get the hell out of Dodge. You know, so that's what we want to do.
Bob, we just got about 30 seconds, and Uncle Chuck and Gamine head to Saratoga, and you're obviously having a pretty darn good Saratoga meet. Jimmy on hand, and of course the Terra Nova's handling the horses that are on hand as well.
Yeah, I got Jimmy there. I just have a new batch, and he's there. I just shipped Gamine and Uncle Chuck. They left this morning. And they're on their way, and they, you know, they couldn't be doing any better. I mean, their training is great. Uncle Chuck, you know, he's, you know, we're going to find out what he's made of. He's never run against this caliber of horse before, so. But, you know, he you know, at least Thousand Words came back and proved that. That was a, you know, that's a good horse that he beat there. So we're looking forward to it and see what he does, and hope he's going to. Some good racing luck and turn for home. I hope we're right there with his law and see where we stack up against him.
Well, and if he finishes third or better, he will most likely get into Derby as well. So again, it's a great target, but not necessarily a must win.
We didn't go up there to run third.
That's
why don't use the word third.
I'm just saying. If you're in terms of the points,
I'm only kidding. No. I think he should run well. I think he's a really good horse. But until you stack him up against the good
sure.
ones, you know, that's when you know. You don't know, how much what you're gonna do, you know. So, but he's a big long stride horse. And, I just love that about him.
Looking forward to seeing him here on Saturday, and good chance we talk next week. Bob, thanks so much.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Bob Baffert, everybody, wrapping up a fast-moving 3 hours. Andy Serling, Bill Gallo, Bill Downs, and Anthony Margata Jr. Good luck today. Stay dry. Parks is canceled. I'll talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 A.P. Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.